Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of MixerG, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And frankly, when you hear today's guest, one of the first things that you're going to think about is, hey Andrew, what happened to MixerG? I mean, you're interviewing someone who creates cups? You're the guy who interviewed the founders of Airbnb, the founders of Wikipedia, the founders of Y Combinator, and these are software empires, and now a guy who sells cups? Well, I've got to tell you something. I'm noticing that there's this revolution in entrepreneurship and online entrepreneurship happening. Just like there was back when Airbnb started as a handful of coders, actually three guys in their home coding something up, and nobody realized that it was a revolution because it seemed too small. I think the same thing is happening in physical goods. The same thing is happening with entrepreneurs like the one you're going to find out about today. What I'm noticing is there are entrepreneurs who have an idea for a physical product. Very often, they'll go to Kickstarter, but more often than that, they'll go to Amazon to start listing the product. They'll go to Alibaba or AliExpress, and they'll find somebody to actually manufacture it, and they'll start selling on Amazon, and they'll actually start to get some real sales. And then what they'll do is they'll transition to their own website, which I've noticed is more and more a Shopify site, and they'll hope and work to get more of the Amazon customers and more customers in general to come to their own store. Or they'll find a retailer and they'll work with the retailer and they'll try to really break free of the Amazon only connection to expand to retail outlets. And that's what I'm noticing. And they'll start with one or two products or one type of product and they'll expand and expand and expand. And so that's what I want to understand with today's guest. Today's guest is an entrepreneur who had an idea for what he called a side hustle. And it ended up being this really big business that's continuing to grow. His name is Eric Howe. He is the co-founder of Sick. Sick makes cups that have a double wall stainless steel vacuum technology that keeps your drinks ice cold for 24 hours. And I wouldn't have believed that, except there are these guys who are obsessed with keeping their freaking drinks ice cold. They will actually see how long their piece of ice will stay cold in a cup. And they've checked out Sick cups and they've agreed that the ice will actually stay cold longer. And by the way, while I'm at it, in this introduction, I should tell you Sick stands for seriously ice cold. And I should also tell you that this interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first is called Top Tal. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. They help you find developers. Eric had an experience that was kind of different with them, and we're going to talk about that later. And also by Acuity Scheduling. They're the company that I use to actually talk to my customers and understand what they're looking for. Helps me grow sales, and it'll help you too. I'll tell you more about them later. They're called Acuity Scheduling. First, Eric, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Hey, let's talk revenue. Where I've got the numbers here in front of me. What do you feel comfortable saying publicly about where your revenues are first 12 months in business?
First 12 months, we were definitely in the millions. Not on the lower side, but not on the higher side, between 0 and 10. So somewhere getting close to the middle.
Somewhere close to the middle. And you've told me the numbers, so I know that you're not just like being cutesy about it. You're really solid here. Is it first 12 months of business, that's where you were, right?
That's right. Yeah, and we sold our first cup December of 2015, so we're about a year and a half into it now.
December 2000, got it, okay. What's the profit? Are you guys profitable?
Yep, we're definitely profitable. We profited just over $1 million in the first year.
Impressive.
Yeah, impressive. It was a fun run.
And you're a guy who, before this, you had these comparison to this, sales jobs. Like, what were you selling before this? What were the two jobs that you had?
So before, I was always in outside sales. My initial job was selling uniforms kind of door to door in the loop of Chicago. You know, I was calling on restaurants and auto body shops and selling a uniform service. So they'd pick up uniforms and clean them. And then I started selling medical devices. And so I did medical devices for close to probably 10 years, you know, in the operating room, kind of helping surgeons put these implants in and making sure the devices are functioning the way they're supposed to.
And so what was the problem with doing that? It seems like you had a good life. You're making good money. You're raising a family, starting a family. What's the problem?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't a problem. You know, it was just I've kind of always had this yearning, and my big drive was like, how can I make money when I sleep? You know, that was the big thing. I mean, I've heard all these, you know, successful even attorneys and physicians I used to work with that, you know, I would joke that they made a ton of money, but they literally didn't make a single dollar when they went to bed.
Yeah.
And so I started doing some private label on Amazon, and that was kind of what tipped me off.
What's the first thing you private labeled on Amazon?
The first thing was a handheld coffee grinder.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll never forget, I was talking to one of my surgeons at the time, and I told him about the whole process, and I got him from China. I was all excited. And then I sold two of them the night before, and I was in the operating room with them, and I said, you know, I made $13 last night. You made zero, man, while you're sleeping. Now, granted, at 9:30 that morning, he'd already made more than I'll make that day, but it was it definitely was something that kind of tipped me off.
And did you buy it from Amazon? Did you buy it? Well, where'd you get the cups, and how many did you buy before you started selling?
So, well, the coffee grinders were first.
The coffee grinders, right.
So that's literally just sourcing it through Alibaba, getting samples, creating logos, creating images, you know, and then slapping your logo on a product, make a couple little small changes to it, send them over. They come to your house in 50 or 60 boxes. You put some Amazon labels on and send them into Amazon. And then, you know, then there's some process to follow through from Amazon pay-per-click and stuff. But then you know, pretty much cross your fingers to see if they sell, you know, and you start learning from there, at least back then. And now it's become a little more strategic as I launch products. But
how many of the coffee grinders did you buy?
I think the first order was like 500.
500. And so you buy them from China. They put your logo on it as you create it. I'm guessing what you're saying is they also send you samples throughout this process. You finally see the sample that represents what your finished product's going to be. And boom, you buy 500. You list it on Amazon.
Yep. You get some photography, you know what I mean? You create a listing and yeah, you're rolling. I mean, they're up and going. Your mom's usually the first person that buys one.
What's the difference between you selling it and anyone else who's on Alibaba buying stuff and selling the exact same grinder?
There really isn't. And that's the crazy thing. I mean, you start, like, I'm extremely candid with customers that will ask me questions on Amazon, which Amazon's an interesting business because they, you know, you have direct customer point of contact, but yet you don't. You don't have that customer's email. You don't have that customer's data. It's all through the Amazon system. But I mean, people will ask that. And they'll pull out a grinder that, you know, it's $45, and one that's 12, and one that's here, and they're saying, what's the difference? And I mean, clearly I can't speak for what the others do, but I know with my heart of heart that they're probably made roughly in the same factory with roughly the same components. It just depends on maybe they're, you know, there's some people that have a bad listing visually, but charge a higher price and somehow get sales because maybe the sucker that thinks higher price equals a higher, better product, you know, it's an interesting strategy.
I see. You know what? I've noticed this with electronics. I remember buying this battery case for my iPhone 7 Plus, and it was $100, but I thought, this is good, really big battery, which is what I needed to spend the whole day working. And then I started watching it on Amazon for like $40, $60, all these different prices, the exact same thing, just a different logo on it. And so essentially, in many cases, it's the same one. It's who's marketing it better and maybe who ends up randomly buying it because of some random thing in their head, like bad design and high price probably means it's really good.
I think the numbers are just unfathomable, the amount of people that are shopping for every product that you can imagine on Amazon. So yeah, it's definitely interesting, but.
Okay. And so one of the things that I've noticed here is in San Francisco, a lot of people walk around with their own cups. They will go into Starbucks with their own hot cup to have it filled up. It's become a thing, right? To have it just like years ago, it was a thing to have like a special knitted holster for your water bottle and to walk around town with your water bottle because you're going to be healthy. Now it's become a thing to walk around town with your stainless steel cup. You noticed that. And you said what to your wife?
I was actually with my business partner. We've got a vacation home together. We both have small children. And so I was using what he brought, some of these stainless steel cups, and we live in Florida, you know, so we're outside playing with the kids and golfing. And I was like, wow, these things work, you know? And so I went home and went to the local sporting goods store, you know, and said, hey, can I have two of those cups? And it was like a 16-year-old kid. And he kind of laughed and said, man, seriously, the day we get these things in, we sell them out. I'm like, what? And so that's what I pretty much said to my wife, like, hey, we're going to sell cups. I don't know how or why, but if people are, you know, selling out, running to a store to buy a $40 cup, they want something with it, you know? And so then we started to quickly just say, well, what can we do that makes it different? I mean, what, we can't just come out with the same cup.
Okay. And so what were you going to do to make it different?
So, I mean, we looked at it and all the cups at the time were just this industrial stainless steel looking cup. I mean, quite honestly, it'd be a cup that if somebody gave me, I would use. But like my wife would never buy it, you know? And so we said, well, what if we made some pink ones? Like pink's probably cool. Or how about some cute blue ones? Like those things will work, you know? And we quickly thought, like in my house, granted, I did try to go buy those, but it would be a purchase where I feel like my wife would go buy those cups. So we said, well, let's make colors that we feel that would appeal to people that are roughly around our wife's age. And, you know what I mean? That demographic.
I see. You know what? I know why I have one. I got one from one of my past interviewees, Andy Fawcett of GMB Fitness sent me one, and I didn't realize how helpful it would be. The reason that I love it is I know if I go out of my house this morning and I want a cup of coffee on the way into work, I'm going to have to pay $6 for just a cup of coffee. No joke, right? And I have to walk three blocks before I can find the place that I like. So I might as well just pour it at home the way that I like it, save my $5, $6, whatever they're going to charge, and I walk around with my cup. What is the obsession with the cold version of that? Why are so many people buying these freaking things now?
Well, I mean, because not everybody lives in San Francisco, right?
But then I imagine for them it's cheaper, isn't it? Or maybe you're saying they can't walk a few blocks and find a cup of coffee, so they want to make it at home and take it with them. What's the obsession? Why is this such a hot thing all of a sudden?
I mean, I think it's just performance. I think that, as you had said, people are active. People are out and about a lot more. I think, as kooky as it sounds, hydration's kind of been beaten in our head over the last handful of years, you know, drink more water, drink more fluids, less soda, less this. So drinks that you consume and make at home that you take with you. I mean, you know, I liken everything to where I'm at in life is a middle 30s with two kids, right? And if I take my kids to the park, there's eight moms there that have some type of stainless steel drinkware.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that I hope that they're ours, but that gets just, it's a society now that people always take stuff to go. They have it there. And so obviously we play on the reusable piece of it as opposed to, you know, I mean, disposable plastic drinkware and stuff like that. So I think it was just kind of a natural evolution of where we're going with everybody moving around, becoming more transformational and yet needing hydration close by.
Okay. And so what you were seeing was, hey, I'm not inventing this thing. I see that people are shifting towards this kind of product. When the stores get it, they run out pretty fast. I know how to get it. I'm just going to put a little twist on it that will actually allow me to stand out so that I'm not the fifth guy or the 100th guy selling the exact same thing on Amazon. Now, I understand the first version, finding a coffee grinder on Alibaba and then just putting your logo on it. This new evolution of your business is a little harder. Now you want to find somebody who manufactures these kinds of cups that you like and can paint it the way that you want it painted. How did you do that?
I mean, so it's still at least at our fingertips from Alibaba and from different sources. You know, I mean, it's still fairly easy. The question is, the hardest part is to really vet those resources. I mean, there's for every one manufacturer you find on one of those sites from how many thousands of miles away in your computer, there's five or six people that pose as manufacturers that are literally just agents, and they just go and talk to manufacturers. And, you know, or there's even people that have whole sales offices that literally just subcontract out to manufacturers. So we just went over there pretty quick. I mean, we placed our first order. By the time we were ready to place our second order, we went over. And I mean, that was the biggest difference, is there was some, you know, other leaders in the space at that time and that have quality products. Like, there wasn't a chink in their armor that we could go after from a quality standpoint. You know, there was a lack in design and some things like that. But the only way for us to compete to try to come out with sell a $30 or $40 cup was to make a quality product. So, you know, cut down our competitor's product in half, measure the components, go make sure that we have third-party quality control. You know, we hire people.
The first time you got your first set of cups, you weren't cutting down your competitor's products, right? You were just going into Alibaba and buying what?
No, we did. We cut down the products and measure how thick the stainless steel is.
You literally went to Amazon, you bought a competitor stainless steel cup, you cut it in half?
Yeah, with a grinder.
And then you measured the thickness of it.
Yeah, because there's two pieces of stainless steel there.
Okay.
So there isn't a ton of magic between the cup, right? You have a stainless steel, you have another stainless steel, and you have a vacuum in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the only real components are the thickness of the stainless steel and the seal of that vacuum there. Because if that vacuum seal goes away, that cup's just as useless as the coffee cup that you get from, you know, the styrofoam coffee cup you get from the factory. So obviously everybody at first was saying, oh yeah, our stainless steel is this thick, but we need to make sure that it was. I mean, it sounds a little crazier than it is, but it wasn't that difficult to literally slice it open, have a little measurement that says, all right, this is X amount millimeters, this is X amount millimeters, this is what our standard, you know, we create a little SOP that says this is what products that we need.
I see. And then the paint job, that's a little harder, right? Because that's definitely harder to measure. How did you specify the color paint that you wanted, the way you wanted to paint it on?
So that was definitely a lot harder. That involved a lot of samples back and forth. And, you know, just like anything, like, I don't know if you ever paint a room in a house and then you go get that color again and it's off, like, you can, your wife usually is the one that sees it. But, you know, so that was definitely hard. But I mean, there's standard paint colors, RALs and Pantones, that are colors that once we establish exactly what we want, the hard thing is that a lot of people, like from a cup standpoint, a lot of people will stop a little short on the product. So we had to at least build independent plugs and try to get the cups exactly the way we wanted to. But that was the hardest part.
What do you mean by build independent plugs?
So if you can imagine how you paint a cup, it literally comes down a line and they hand spray it with a powder coat. Mm-hmm. Well, what most people do is they literally tape the top of the cup. So if you look at a cup, the paint won't go all the way up to the top. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the cheap way, right? You just do that and then you just spray paint everything. But we didn't like that look. We thought visually it didn't look as well. So we wanted the paint or powder coat to come all the way up. So in order to do that, you have to create a plug, a rubber plug that goes inside the cup so that when you hit it with paint, you don't have to hit tape. It'll cover the entire surface area of the cup. But that was we literally custom made them, went back and forth. And
the factory you found in China did this for you?
Yeah.
Give me one tip for finding the first factory that someone who's listening to us should use. If they want to find a factory that can actually do good work, what would you suggest?
So, I mean, you definitely go to Alibaba. You got to select a gold supplier and somebody that's at least been doing it for 10 years. And there was a lot of years ago, that was kind of fluff. Before Alibaba went public, I think that anybody could make up and say that they'd been around for 10 years, say that they'd been around for 12 years. The website's become a lot more accurate. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing. And then, you know, you've got to make sure that you have somebody that you interact with a lot, that their English is good, because man, a lot gets lost in translation.
And are you chatting with them using their service, using the contact?
Yeah,
option?
Either that, or we talk on through WeChat a lot, like, you know, both audio calls as well as chat calls. And then I'm a big email fan because everything can be tracked back. You know, I can easily say this is what we discuss at this time as opposed to chats and calls.
I see. And so you're getting to know them and seeing, do they speak the language well? And also, can they start sending you samples? And you're looking for someone who's been on at least 10 years. I'm scrolling, looking for someone who could make a cup like yours. So far, the longest that I've seen is someone who's 8 years in the business, 8 years on Alibaba, excuse me.
Yeah.
So it's tough to find that.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and our first supplier that made our first cup is not the suppliers we use now. And the dichotomy of it that I find is the people that are on Alibaba are the people that need business. If you were to go make glassware, the best glassware maker in China is not on Alibaba because they're not looking for Andrew to try to buy 1,000 pieces of glass. Right. So you kind of start a little bit with bottom feeders, but you've got to at least kind of work your way
through. And then how do you work your way up? What's the next level? How do you find that next level supplier?
I think you have to physically go there. There's two different fairs called the Canton Fair that goes on twice a year. Mm-hmm. You go there. It's obviously a little bit overbearing. It's huge. Or you go there and you arrange your own, you know, I mean, you find somebody, like we found a couple different people that work with us there that are sourcing agents that have said, okay, well, here's who you've got to go talk to. Here's who you've got to go talk to. And
how do you find the right sourcing agent?
Through about 72 hours of different emails back and forth and up at 2 o'clock in the morning on the phone with them. You know, it's definitely time.
Just trying to figure out who can you work with? Who do you trust to be your rep there?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm looking at your competitors and the lip of the cup isn't painted.
Right.
And it's often covered with a lid. So you can't really tell.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, we obviously can't speak to why they chose that. We believe that everybody tried to drive us to do that because it's easier from a manufacturing standpoint. Visually, I just don't like the look as much.
I wouldn't have even noticed, but I get it. You want to stand out. This is what's going to separate you from all those other guys who look exactly the same.
That's
stainless
right.
Steel, until stainless steel.
Until they figure out how to make our plugs and they steal it because everybody likes it.
And that's what happens.
That's exactly what happened to you already. No, not quite. But we've had, you know, rumblings. It's hard to manage something from thousands of miles away. So we've heard, hey, your cup's in this facility and they're looking at it, they're changing this. And so it's very hard to stay on top of it. I mean, at the end of the day, those people in China don't work for you. They work with you. And so
yeah,
they're as driven as we are to get a sale.
All right. And your goal was, even though there's a lot of back and forth, you're saying, look, if we could get to the holidays, December, which is what you mentioned, 2015, then at least we'll get some holiday sales in and that will start our company right. That's the biggest shopping period of the year. You got to get in on it. Did you do a few tests? As I understand it from your conversation with our producer, you did do a few Amazon tests before that big launch, right?
We did. Yeah. I mean, we definitely, you can order some small samples just to kind of see would people buy it. You know, the hard thing is on Amazon is naturally you need reviews in order for people to view your product, mm-hmm. unless you have a very hot item that maybe coincidentally happens to be sold at December that a lot of other products are sold out. And so then your product kind of moves up the ranks a little bit. So we had definitely tested it just a few colors and a few, I mean, small volumes, a couple hundred here, a couple hundred there, and said, wow, they sold out in hours. You know, okay, well, people want this product. And so then it was pretty easy. Then it was launch in December to consumers. And then in January is when we started having retailers, you know, reach out to us and say, hey, do you carry cups in retail stores?
But how many cups did you buy before that December launch of yours, December 2015?
Oh, only maybe 500, 600 cups.
I see. So you pretty much sold out. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, well, then our first order was like 2,500 cups. And we sold those in about a day and a half.
This was
the December launch.
Oh, I see. 2,500 for December 2015 or afterwards?
December.
Got it. Okay. So first you did 500, then you went for 2,500, then you even sold those out. And so by the end of the year, you sold about 3,000.
Yeah.
What did you do about the ratings? I don't think I picked up on that.
So the ratings, you know, it was interesting. Amazon's actually changed now, but originally what you have, there's a ton of these review groups of people that want discounted product in order to write an honest review. You know, yep. They could leave you a one star, they could leave you two stars. Amazon has since put the kibosh on that. They no longer will allow these review groups. And so I would assume now you kind of got to hope you have a lot of friends and a lot of family that'll take your product and then leave a review on Amazon. If not, you know, you've either got to discount it and then hope that you have a good mechanism to garner those reviews, you know, from a email follow-up sequence and stuff like that. But we launched through a couple different review groups. It was kind of what gave us that initial buzz. Mm-hmm. But again, to be 100% honest, it was very good timing that there was a lot of other products that were not available that were sold out, being that it was December 12th, 13th.
Okay.
So we naturally moved up even though our reviews were much lower.
I see. But you can still have family do it, and that seems like a common thing to do. The other thing I'm noticing is people who have even small mailing lists of fans will start selling that way. It's not enough to really make a living because they don't have a huge audience base, not tens of thousands like we do at Mixergy, but they're not looking for that. They just need a handful of really passionate fans, some of whom will go and buy the product and give it a high rating and a really thoughtful review. And then after that, they'll get some organic reviews. I'm also finding that people will send me product as a gift knowing that I will buy it anyway, and then they'll ask me, if you buy it, can you please review it?
Yeah.
Which is frankly a big ask for me because I hate doing reviews on Amazon.
I know. I never left one before I had a business on Amazon. Now I leave one just to kind of throw some love, you know, if the product
is good. Me too. It's such a pain to do. There's nothing in it for me. All right. Let me talk about the way that we handle our customers here at Mixergy. And I think it's something that everyone should learn from. One of the things that we did recently was we launched this bot program to teach people how to create bots, Eric. And the way that we launched it was, first, I introduced it to a few people in my audience. And I said, if you're interested in this, you can't sign up. There's no website. You have to schedule a call with me so that I understand why you're interested, so that we could figure out if it's a good fit for you. So what I did was I had them express interest, fill out an application, put down, I think, like a $20 deposit, and then get on a call with me first. I wanted to talk to potential customers. And to talk to potential customers and schedule all those calls is a nightmare. Who's in the room with you? It seems like someone. Is it one of your kids?
No, my wife will open the door to make sure that kids didn't mess anything up.
I don't know how you work from home. I got to tell you, it would drive me nuts. Even when it was just me and my wife, as soon as she moved in with me, and I really urged her to move in with me because I wanted her to live with me, I said, I can't work in the house anymore. I had to soon after that go out. The distractions don't bother you at all. You seem like an easygoing guy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you learn it, man. But it's like I said, it involves, you know, I definitely get the most productive work done from about 9 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Everybody
else in the house is asleep.
And your wife doesn't want you to like cuddle up with her before going to sleep? She doesn't say put it all away?
No, she definitely gets it. She understands there's not a whole lot of time for that.
I see. She sees, hey, look, this guy's finally got something that he's passionate about and it's rising. We can't put the kibosh on that.
Right.
Weekends you spend, do you go to bed with her at the same time?
No, but more just because my wife's a very early go to bed, early riser. You know, she's up at 5 a.m. working out. I'm not quite a 5 a.m. workout person. So, we usually, you know, hang out, watch a movie or something like that, and then I'll work a little bit or do something like that. But I definitely don't go to bed at the same time.
I see. All right. So here's what I was doing. I was trying to talk to my potential customers. I knew it would be a nightmare to try to schedule it. What I did was I went to Acuity Scheduling. I created a brand new calendar for this. And I picked the times that I was available to have conversations with people. I also picked a few questions that I wanted to ask them before they got on a call with me. Anyone who was interested enough to put down a deposit got a link to my calendar. They got to book themselves on my calendar, answer a few questions, and then I got a call with them. And I understood what they wanted. I understood why they signed up. And I thankfully figured out who the right fit for it and also who the wrong fit was. That's the power of calling. I'm noticing more and more people, just like more and more people are getting into physical products, more and more people are talking to their customers before they buy. It used to be a big pain. Now it's really easy. It teaches you so much. And frankly, from a point of view of selling, it's also fantastic, right? When people get to talk to a human being, they feel much better about the company and much more likely to sign up. So imagine this, a website that just says, here's a site, go buy, or one that says, schedule a call, schedule a demo, or buy. Right? And that schedule a demo link could point to an Acuity scheduling calendar that's on your site. So it looks like your site. It's a native experience. Anyone can pick a time to schedule a call with anyone on your team, and then they do a demo. Really powerful. Look, if you're out there and you want to talk to your customers before they buy, while they're still customers of yours, after they cancel, make it easy for them. That's what Acuity scheduling is all about. And if you're a Mixergy listener, they're going to give you a ton of free time. All you have to do is go to acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. I frankly think they should give you less time. They're giving you 45 days trial for free and throwing in an exclusive private one-on-one consultation session with one of their pros. I think they should give you like 2 weeks. You'll know in 2 weeks whether it's a good fit or not. In 45 days, you can probably do a whole sales run, right? Our whole sales campaign lasted less than 45 days. It's really powerful. I'm going to ask them to cut it back. It's available to you right now at that 45-day level if you go to acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. Acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. Actually, why am I going to ask them to cut back? Guys, go check out acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. If it works for you, even if you don't sign up, I love it. All right, there we go. You know what I was actually doing there is trying to create like scarcity by saying, hey, let's go tell Acuity, come back, right? And I said, screw that. I'm not creating artificial scarcity. If people sign up, they should sign up. They should.
Yeah. I mean, 45 days is long, but I will say that I need to sign up for it. I keep hearing you talk about it, but I like when I talked with Ari, your producer, mm-hmm. and you know, when somebody just sends you an email and says, pick this time. I mean, phone tag in today's world, I think is the worst game and the most time-consuming game in the world. I can't stand it.
And you know what? And I had someone on the team say, hey, Andrew, how many interviews are you doing next week? Next week, I'm recording 15 interviews in 5 days. That's huge. Maybe even more. Might be 20. And someone said, well, do you have someone on your team who's going to follow up with them, make sure that no one cancels so that you're not just wasting your time? I said, I don't need it. Acuity's going to do that. I hardly ever have anyone not show up because Acuity will send them reminders. All right. I see now you got your business. It's up and running. The next level for you, the next step was easier than it is for other people. You're saying that resellers started coming to you?
They did. And honestly, we keep pinching ourselves and there's no doubt that it was unique in that respect. But the honeymoon, you know, I keep telling my partner for the last while, we kept saying the honeymoon is not going to last forever. You know, not everybody gets people asking for your product.
Why? Why didn't they just go into Alibaba and pick the cups that they wanted? Why do they need to have this sick cup?
Well, I mean, from a retailer standpoint, we're talking about, you know, I mean, a boutique down the store from down the road from your house, you know, in San Francisco, they're carrying our cups. So they're not going to go on Alibaba and buy 12 cups, 24 cups. And, you know, they've got to get samples. They've got to get all the stuff.
Why yours as opposed to any of the other options that are available on Amazon?
I mean, that's a great question. That's what we were trying to figure out. That's why we talked to a lot of our customers at first. You know, first off, when you first said sick earlier in the interview, you smiled and laughed. Like, we think people like that. People think it's funny. I mean, it's granted, there's some people think it's silly. Our wives thought it was crazy. We were going to call them sick cups. But, you know, my partner and I, we used to always, when we were hanging out, we'd say get sick or that's sick. Or you hear it a lot in like, you know, adventure games and sports and stuff like, oh, that was sick. And so we literally got our first samples and my partner was the one, Bobby, and he said, these things are sick, man. I was like, well, let's call them sick cups. And then the acronym came after. And so people liked the idea of the brand. The other thing is we've offered a lifetime warranty. Nobody else has really ever stepped up to do that. These products, I mean, they're built pretty rugged. They're a good product. I mean, there's no reason that this cup should break in a year, 2 years, 5 years. And quite honestly, if it does, then I owe it to you to give you another one if you spent $30 or $40 on a cup. And so I think a lifetime warranty hooked a lot of people at first. Again, we were very early in the game of these powder-coated colors. So when these retailers were calling us, they couldn't go on Amazon. They didn't have 25 different people selling powder-coated cups. So we were one of the first, you know, to come out with that idea of it, that people could at least have their own color. And so it was still just an early adopter type of mentality.
You know what? Even now, I type in stainless steel tumbler, I get a bunch of options. I just add the word color to the end of it, and I don't see many.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely not as available as it was. You know, I mean, it's more available now, but back then, I mean, you're talking like there was nobody on there. And so quickly our business went from, you know, obviously 100% Amazon to kept going down from, you know, 20, 80, 30, 70, 60, 40, 50. And now Amazon's less than 5%, about 8% of our business. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Am I right also that Shopify is your platform and you're doing, I'd say, less than 5% on your own site?
From a direct-to-consumer standpoint, right. Yes. So 80% of our business is through Shopify, but it's through our retailer. So it's, you know, Werner Hardware in rural Pennsylvania jumps on our site, buys a case of cups, and we ship it to them tomorrow.
And why are they doing that on Shopify? I didn't realize Shopify was a good platform for working with resellers.
It may not be the best, but it was kind of like what I've always said is we need to have a new platform. But the funny thing is the last 17 months of our life, I feel like we've been running downhill. We haven't fallen yet, but our feet have never gotten under us enough to take that big. So it'll work just the same. You know, Shopify was built for you to go in and buy an individual product. Well, if we just create our SKUs and create our shop as an individual product for you happens to be 24 cups, then it works the same. So that's the way. So 85% of our business is through Shopify, through retailers.
What is it? Retailers.sickcup.com?
No, it's the same thing. There's just a login. And when you log in, we've created a tag that says retailers that you only see a certain product page.
I see. And how does somebody get the login information? How do they even know that that exists?
So if you're on like our website, you go to retailers, you apply to be a retailer, and then you deal back and forth with some people on our team that kind of field some questions. You've got to give your business license. You know, you've got to. We vet you a little bit and then
to make sure that I'm not buying it just for a wedding that I'm throwing this weekend or something like
right.
that.
Right.
I see. Okay. All right.
And so that now our new focus has to be kind of direct to consumer, you know, but honestly, when you start a, you know, consumer good product, you're either going to go direct to consumer initially, or you're going to go through retail channels. The hard part about going through retail is you establish your prices and you can't sell them cheaper than your retailers can sell them to consumers, you know?
So I get that somebody reached out to you and they started buying. I'm wondering, when you wanted to grow it, was there anything you could do to get more resellers? Was there anything you could do to reach out to retailers? What'd you do? Yeah, I see your eyebrows went up as I asked that question.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I mean, the beauty of Facebook is incredible for a business like ours right now. You know, when we can dial into groups and we can actually, I don't even know if I just learned about this recently because my partner handles more of the Facebook advertising, but you know, where we can literally upload our email list and Facebook will scrub that list to find the, you know, people that like the same things. So the interesting thing about our retailers is we're not selling to big box retailers currently at this time. You know, a year ago, we were selling to a ton of mom and pop small stores. Like I said, a boutique that if you and your wife were walking on the store, you know, road, she would say, oh, I'm going to run in there. And you're going to say, well, I'll check my phone out here on the bench. Right.
Right.
So those people are usually business owners that are active, that are on Facebook. So we can hone in on those people via Facebook, target them and start collecting these incoming leads.
I see. And then but you still needed a handful of them. You needed, I think, a few hundred of those potential resellers before you can find others using the similar audience feature on Facebook, right?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I'm talking like when we started, like we could get 100 people a day that were just filling out our application to come
really?
Carry our products. Yeah.
How? Because they were looking for this.
Yeah, they were looking for the product. The market demanded it at the time. These small, you know, Julie's Boutique in San Francisco did not have a rep calling on her that carried a large label stainless steel drinkware.
I see. So they were just so what I'm getting from this is that if you find something that's hot that people are looking for already, then the world does start to come to you. You didn't need to do – I don't see a big blog on your site. I don't see any content marketing, right?
No. I think that the hardest part is – basically shoot first and aim later, right? Don't be too scared. Don't try to make the product perfect. Don't try to make the website perfect. Don't worry that Shopify is not the absolute perfect backend for a wholesaler. You know, make it work and figure it out. And so it was more kind of take action, and it happened to be very, very lucky that timing was there.
I see. It's kind of like the fidget spinners. If you were there just as they were starting to take off, then you were going to do better than if you were trying to push a product onto the world and explain to them why they needed it.
I'm sure those things sell at what, $4 or $5, but I'm sure the first person that sold them is probably on vacation now and you and I are working.
You know what? I read an article about the woman who invented it. She actually lost the trademark, the patent on it, because she couldn't keep it up or something like that. And then she lost the whole business and she watched these two other companies basically run away with it. And now everywhere you go, you see fidget spinners.
Really?
I see. But that's the big lesson here, that if you can find this thing that's hot, just as it's starting to take off, it's much easier to grow your business.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I still have this side business of selling products on Amazon. And so, I mean,
you're still selling other products on Amazon.
Yeah, I still do that. You know, the coffee grinders and stuff like that. But I mean, I guess the thought is, I don't think that you're going to build a whole business out of it, you know, but you're exactly right. I mean, you've got to plug and find that hot one. But if you do, yeah, it's crazy that people will come to you if the market needs a product.
All right. And what you did that was helpful is you collected email addresses of all the retailers who were interested, which then allowed you to go to Amazon, to Facebook, and target not just them, but people like them. I see. And then it becomes this virtual cycle where you start advertising to people who are like them. Some of them fill out your form, which then allows you to target them and gives you more insight into who else you might want to target and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah. So it, like I said, we definitely cut our teeth on the smaller retailers, you know what I mean? Smaller boutique retailers that from a cash flow standpoint will pay, you know, pay up front before you ship products, don't demand terms so that I can provide cash flow to keep buying more product and stuff like that. But now we've, you know, moved on to the next phase.
And still dealing with the manufacturers is always an issue. In fact, you told our producer, I quit my medical device sales company, the job that I had there, got a shipment of 30,000 cups. And then what happened with them?
So as I was talking earlier in the interview, we said the hardest part was figuring out the powder coating, the fine tuning. And we'd had third party inspectors in our factories, but yeah, basically we got 30,000 cups that just weren't good, man. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, definitely in the six figures from a loss standpoint, let alone then you're standing there trying to figure out how the heck you're, what are you going to do with these cups?
What did you do with the cups?
So we ended up actually, I mean, paying more than the cup originally cost to get that powder coat off and get them repowder coated in the U.S. facility.
Oh, wow. I see. And so yeah. you had them color them properly. They still got it wrong, even though you hired inspectors, which I didn't realize was the thing. So if we're working with manufacturers in China, we should hire inspectors to go and check out the product before it gets shipped, right?
You should. But okay, the word to the wise is you could pay an inspector $200 and somebody could walk in and say, well, $300, you can email Andrew and tell them they're great.
I see. And that's what happened, you think?
I think, you know, they were not my employees. And so I don't know. I mean, yeah, the reports that I saw, the pictures are not the same as the cups that I received.
I see. Okay.
So right, it's hard, but yeah, I mean, that was quality is the biggest thing to try to
sell.
And that's
when you started
product,
creating standard operating procedures that included quality assurance. What did you do to make sure that in the future your cups would actually look the way you wanted them to?
So, I mean, obviously vetted some better third-party inspectors and create a process where we actually have three different inspectors from three different companies throughout the process. Two of them.
Oh, I think I just lost your connection. Let's give it a sec. Sorry, two of them did what?
Get conflicted if they're, so we'll have one inspector go during the manufacturing process and then two separate ones when the cups are done so that we can kind of analyze those reports and make sure that we're getting the same pictures and the same stuff. And then, I mean, yeah, just create an SOP that says, okay, here's how long it takes to make a product. Here's when we go in and inspect it. Create in a very detailed document that says, this is a failure. This is good. Because, you know, the difference is we're not selling electronics. You don't hit a button, it either turns green or red. You know, it's more of a cosmetic and visual approval. I mean, you may see a cup and say, Eric, that's fine. And I may have a critical eye that says, no, it's not. So especially from a language barrier standpoint, laying out enough pictures, and unfortunately, we had enough pictures of bad cups that we could show you hundreds of pictures of what was bad. So creating those documents that says this is good, this is bad, you know, run them by our manufacturers to make sure our expectations aren't too high because you're still manufacturing a product. So there is some variance of defect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just kind of working through all that I had no clue how to do, but you figure it out.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about TopTal. And actually, before the interview started, I said to you, look, I'm going to talk about TopTal and I'm going to talk about acuity scheduling, any issues with either of them. And you gave me this look that made me think, did this guy have a bad experience with TopTal? And then you said, I had this experience with them and it wasn't a good one. What happened with TopTal for you?
So through listening to your podcast, I had heard about TopTal. I got on there and checked it out. But basically, I was looking for somebody that would almost just say small updates, you know, versus mm-hmm. me paying a retainer to some of these expensive. I was thinking of somebody that would work, who knows, 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, two hours a week.
They totally have someone who will work 5, 10 hours a week, especially if it's an ongoing relationship. It's a great way to find a developer. So you said to them, I need someone to work that many hours a week to do what?
Just like if small stuff, if we want to change pictures on our website, stuff that I could probably do in Snapchat, I don't want to. And, you know, they were very thorough. They emailed, called until they got a hold of me and then basically explained that it was almost too small for them, you know, and their developers are even a little more talented than that. And it wasn't a project. And so it was nice of them to basically turn the business away. I thought I was willing to pay for somebody to do very medial
work. My sense before we started was that you were also feeling a little bit insulted or hurt by that, that you were too small for them or that your project was too small. Am I right?
Yeah, definitely that the project was too small. But I mean, in hindsight, it was.
Yeah. And you ended up going to what? The expert place at Shopify? They have this list of experts that you can hire who are just focused on Shopify, right? Yeah. And what I found is that TopTal has actually done that with many of my listeners. People will listen to an interview, hear me talk about TopTal, and then go to them and say, hey, I have this project. And sometimes because, hey, this actually is not a really good fit for TopTal, and I should say top is in top of your head, tal is in talent. And sometimes TopTal will say, hey, it's not a good fit because you don't have the resources to actually work with this developer. Or other times it'll be like you, it's not a project that we want to take on. They don't want to update the photos on someone's site. They don't want to do basic stuff like that. These are really highly talented developers that are looking for challenging work. This is the kind of caliber person that you can find at Google, at Facebook. And I know it because TopTal really prides themselves on getting this top developer into their network. And so the benefit of working with TopTal is that they've curated a list. They know who the best people are. And that because they're not in Mountain View, they're not living in San Francisco where the cost of living is expensive. Sometimes they're living even in Eastern Europe. They're living where they grew up. They're living where they were born. You can hire them to work on your schedule and you don't have to pay these expensive San Francisco prices. And so if you guys are out there and you're looking for developers, you can go to toptal.com/Mixergy and do what many Mixergy interviewees and listeners have done. Hire the best of the best developers. These are people who will really help shape the way that you build your company, specifically the software that your companies run on. And if you're a Mixergy listener, you're going to get something that they don't give anyone else. It's 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, and that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. That's top is in top of your head, tal is in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy. Yeah, let me see. Let me see if they even do shop. Yeah, they do. They have Shopify developers. I wanted to confirm by going to their site, but they would want to do some serious coding work for you on Shopify.
Yep, or maybe, a complete, redesign or something like that. They don't want to change pictures.
I got to tell you, Shopify has really come up in this world. I remember when Toby first bought ads for me and Harley, the two guys over at Shopify, their goal was to just tell the world, you can build on our platform. You don't have to use this software that you have to figure out yourself and install yourself. And then even though it's open source, it means you then have all these potential conflicts with plugins. We'll make it all work. And they had a real hard job trying to convince the world, I think, for a long time. And then boom, it took off.
Crazy. Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's, it's the easiest part of my business, which is a very nice thing to say.
You know who lost out on this is Magento. These guys created basically the WordPress of shopping. It was really taking off. People loved it if they were in e-commerce, but you had to install it yourself. You had to manage it yourself. And then they sold to eBay, where I think the project just basically died. And then even big companies that, like yours, you're really at a level where you would have gone to Magento. You wouldn't have wanted to be on somebody else's platform. You would have wanted to own the software yourself. You're just doing it on Shopify. You're not going to Magento. Yeah. What other tools do you use? What other tools that are not obvious to me as an outsider do you use to manage your store on Amazon, to keep track of your inventory, to talk to your customers, any of it?
So we use a tool called SKU Labs for our inventory. Basically, Shopify sends an order over to SKU Labs. SKU Labs is where my warehouse staff gets an order, runs out, scans a barcode, ships the product. You know, throws a shipping label, prints out right away. It sits on the dock and UPS picks it up at 5 o'clock. And so it's, as I was telling you before the interview started, I mean, warehouse operations, when you really break them down, are very simple. I mean, obviously my warehouse is a little different than an Amazon warehouse or something like that. But at the end of the day, it's boxes in and boxes out. And so, the beauty of Shopify is very simple. A SKU comes across, it sends over to SKU Labs. We get a ding. It actually when you have a Shopify site, my little two-year-old daughter now, like if I have the volume on my phone, you get the little ding on Shopify. My little two-year-old daughter goes, pay. So I know when that happens that in the warehouse, those guys are getting an order printed out and they're going to pick an order, you know? And so it's kind of, it's a very streamlined system, honestly. And other than that, we don't use a ton of detail, crazy software. You know what I mean? Our products are physical consumer goods. I mean, we've got a, you know, a CRM system that tracks from returns if we're having, because we give a lifetime warranty. So if we have customers that have returns. Mm-hmm. Other than that, everything operates off of Google Sheets, Google Docs, stuff that people can access from multiple locations. And
what do you do with Google Sheets to manage your products and to manage your customers?
Not as much managing customers and products. That's more like internal documents. You know, like I handle all the finances and stuff like that. So that's me running reports that my partner can access at any time that I can share with any of our employees that, you know, I mean, I've got something, we've got a custom cup business that, you know, where we're starting to put, you know, certain logos on cups. And so we have somebody that runs that department. And so I can jump on at any time and see the leads that they're working on.
And that's also, you know, in Google Docs?
All in Google Docs, yeah.
So if I were to order custom cups with Mixergy, maybe I needed 1,000 of them. That would be in a Google Doc.
It would be in a Google Doc once you ordered it. Shopify is actually where we process the order.
Okay.
So we would send you an invoice through Shopify, and it does. What's in Google Docs is when I track where that order is but for my customer. So I know that the person that handles that for me has sent your cups already out to the person that's going to print them, when they're going to be printed, when they're going to get back, and when they're going to get to your office.
Oh, I see. Like project management in a Google Doc.
Right.
And you're doing it all manually, or is Zapier at least sending the data into the doc?
Zapier sends the data into the doc.
Wow. I really should have. You know what? I was their first customer. I should have been their first investor. Forget first customer. Instead, I introduced them to their first investor, and then they ended up at Y Combinator, and things just took off. What a great freaking product.
Yeah,
can't run your business without Zapier.
No. It definitely works.
What do you use for your CRM?
We don't have CRM.
No CRM.
So if
someone buys from you, you don't have anything to nurture them, to try to get them to come back, to buy again? None of that.
Well, we've got an email sequence system through Shopify that basically is following up if a customer has an order within X amount. But no, from a retailer standpoint, you know, usually a retailer should be ordering every 45 days.
And
you know,
if
they don't, then we have an email sequence that'll start emailing them. If they don't order in 60 days, I have somebody that calls them.
Oh, I see. So Shopify manages all that for you.
Yep.
And
just
Shopify
by an alarm
will tell your people when to call up a customer?
Yep.
Interesting. I had no idea. They just ping them, and how do they ping them? An email?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be an email since this customer hasn't ordered in 60 days.
Unbelievable. All right. Okay. So the other thing I noticed was I went to your site. You started out as cups, as a cup company, right? And I intentionally didn't want to introduce you as the founder of Sick Cups because you've gone way beyond cups. Right. How did you know what else to create? What's your process for learning from your customers?
So, I mean, there's a ton of just asking our retailers, you know, like I said earlier, at the base of our business, and we're starting to get a lot more into direct to consumer, but the base of our business is selling through these retailers. The nice thing about that is we can call one retailer and talk to them, and they can describe what 20 of their customers, as opposed to us having to ping 20 individual customers.
Right.
So pretty much just customer feedback, asking our retailers, what products do they, you know, do they carry other products in stainless steel? Well, what are they? Okay, they're water bottles. They're this, you know, different products. Well, why can't we offer that if the same person's going to be buying these similar products, you know? And so then we partnered recently with Tervis, which is kind of a really big deal for us. But that, I mean, it's going to stay in the drink line, but it at least opens us up to some more customer data on what other products people want. Now, I don't know where the product development will go, but our goal isn't really, you know, maybe it'll be backpacks, maybe it'll be, who knows, everybody asks coolers and stuff like that. But our goal, we kind of build it on the idea of, you know, if you're wherever you're at that you're getting sick, we want you to have our product with you. I mean, that could be literally laying in a hammock and having no kids within 30 miles. Well, we hope you're going to have either a water bottle or a cup or something like that. And so, or that's, who knows, on a hiking trip in Croatia, then maybe we have a product that fits that mold.
Yeah, I never heard of Tervis before you, frankly. And then I started Googling them. These guys have their own retail outlets. They make cups themselves, it seems like, right?
Yeah.
Like the plastic tumblers that might have images of fish, or the Golden State Warriors recently won the championship, right? So you could get a Golden State Warriors cup, I bet, from them, right?
Yep.
And so they call you up and they say, hey, we make plastic cups. We need somebody to do stainless steel, right? You guys can do it. You can probably put all of the logos that we have access to, right? Because they have partnerships that give them access to these logos. They say, you can put it on our cups. And so you say, yeah. And they start asking you all these questions. And you immediately start to think, why can't they do this themselves? Why can't they do it themselves? Why do they need you?
Well, I think they just bought me and my partner. But
you think they did
completely,
what?
I said, I think they just bought into myself and my partner in our sales pitch. But no, to be
what was the sales pitch? Yeah, tell me. Why you guys?
Their biggest reason was, A, they've always offered a lifetime warranty on their products. They feel good about, even though their product's made of plastic, if they make it the way that they should, that thing should last forever. When they quickly saw stainless steel coming out of nowhere and they decided they need to do it, Tervis has made every product in the USA for 50 plus years. So they tried to look at making the USA. Basically, their purchase price would have been around $70 for a cup. Okay. So they said, well, we can't do that. Well, then if you've only made products in America, it's very hard to go source a product from China and say made in the USA, except for this one little product line. So they said, well, we've got to at least test it. Let's see if our consumers are very adamant about they don't want a product made in China. So the only way to do that is kind of through a co-partnership, and the fact that they have some of their own stores, I mean, they have 50 stores, but they're in about 11,000 retail locations. Mm-hmm. So they can easily test in their 50 stores within weeks, right? You don't have to call Bed Bath & Beyond and ask about this new product. So we tested in their stores and, basically the customer really wanted that product. They were excited about that product. And so then it was kind of like, well, how do we do this partnership? I mean, they know what they're doing on this. You're right. They've been in 11,000 stores. They've been selling cups for 50 years. So why don't I become, kind of their private label in a sense where I'm going to make their stainless steel. I'm going to handle all the China production, all that piece, and provide them a quality product that then they can distribute into all their locations. They can put the Warriors logo, they can put whatever they want. And so we're still fairly young in them. I mean, we've only been launched for about 2 months, but yeah, by the end of the summer, it should be in about 11,000 stores. And you'll see it in every Bed Bath & Beyond and Bass Pro and all these stores.
So they can end up being a majority of your business at this point.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's, from my standpoint, my big question to them was, yeah, what if you become 70, 80% of my business?
Right.
There's no doubt that I set out to build a business, and to have all your chips in one, bag is kind of a little bit nerve wracking. So it's kind of, it would not be a bad problem to have from a revenue standpoint, but if you look to sell your business, it would be definitely devalued if 80% of it was one customer.
Yeah. Yeah. And frankly, then it gives them a lot of leverage with you, right?
No doubt.
That they're taking up a bunch of your business.
No, there's no doubt. So it's a very fragile partnership at this point because we're just new and young, but we're both really excited about it. At the end of the day, if I can make a little bit of money off of it and it's worth it for them to not have to deal with that. I mean, the problem with the 1,000 employee organization is if they decide to start sourcing from China, they'd probably have to have a 20 person team, And all these, the process, it's a heck of a lot easier to say, hey, Eric, we need X amount of cups.
Instead of trying to figure out the whole thing themselves.
Right. I mean, there's no doubt they may eventually do that, but the scale, it's afforded us an opportunity to scale at a very quick pace over the next 6 to 8 months.
You were starting to say earlier, maybe we get into backpacks. I feel like you're still trying to figure out what SICK is going to be. Are you someone who expands into backpacks, or are you someone who expands into carafes, for example, right? And that's a tough thing. The only thing that I could see that gives me a sense of who you are is this, I guess your Instagram shows what you're about, right? I looked at one of your competitors. Your competitor is showing me some rugged dude by himself. There's nobody there except for him in the wilderness. He has a stainless steel, not a cup, but a stainless steel gallon jug that he's pouring into a stainless steel cup because he only has that and the bear that could potentially kill him tonight. And your approach is the opposite. We're the guys who could be with you on your hammock. We're the guys who your kids are going to enjoy drinking water from. Right?
Yep.
That's
yeah,
it. It's this atmosphere of fun, tumbler, not fun, fun coffee, wine, cocktail type of thing.
Right. I mean, our product is probably not going to make you have fun. It depends on what concoction's inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just hoping to be there with you when you're having fun. Like, that's it. And so it's a very simple concept, but it's totally true. And I think it lends itself to a lot more, demographics and marketing opportunities than saying the only time you're going to drink it is if you hiked up a mountain and killed two elk and you're trying to get them back down. You need one drink of, whatever. And
or pretend you do. I mean, frankly, there's a big market of Americans who just want to pretend they do, right? That's why I bought my SUV. I always wanted to go and drive over something, but I was living in LA. There was nothing to drive over, right? I couldn't even drive over the cars in front of me in traffic. I was just stuck there like everyone else. But I do see how you have this feeling. And what I'm wondering is, how did you get to that? You're a fairly young company. How did you figure out what your tone was going to be, what your Instagram was going to be, what your product colors were going to be? How did you come up with the personality of the brand?
I mean, it definitely resembles, my partner and I are extremely similar people. We're best friends outside of work. You know, now mm-hmm. we talk to ourselves, each other, way more than we talk to our wives and other people like that. And so it, you know, and this is probably, if you took a marketing class at any university, is probably the first thing the professor would not want you to hear. But I felt like a lot of these, and especially in this, you know, industry, it was pinpoint. Like you said, it was speaking to one person. This is it. Where honestly, I'm maybe the mundane, you know, maybe the mid-30s guy with two kids is not that cool, but there is a ton of them out there and a ton of them that are doing the things that we're doing. And you know what I mean? And that are out using these products the same way we are. And so we've kind of mimicked what our personal life is. You know, when we're on vacation, we use this thing and it works. Like when you're in Costa Rica and you've got a sick cup and you're jumping off a waterfall, like that's pretty sick. It's fun. And then you've got ice cold drink. You know, my wife takes the kids to the park and leaves her cup in the South Florida heat for 2 hours and comes back, it has ice in it. Like that works, but we don't need to show her killing an elk to do that.
You know what though? Your version of that is the craft cocktail. Like I've noticed for people in their 30s, the aspiration isn't to go out there and be in the wilderness where a bear could potentially get you and to come back home like having killed something. It's more like I aspire to make the right cocktail. And even on your Facebook page at the top is a guy who's got the shaker. Yeah, the shaker. Yeah. I was trying to figure out the speakeasy. That's what it is. It looks like he's in a modern speakeasy. That's one of the big things here in San Francisco, to go to a speakeasy where you're pretending that you could get busted at any minute for having a cocktail. But that's a thing, right? They're not making cocktails enough that they need the shaker. But it is a nice touch that says, here's what our brand is about. We're about this kind of experience.
Yeah. And we don't have it figured out yet. You know, like you said earlier, I mean, we don't know exactly. It still is partially fluid, and that's, you know, kind of liberating, kind of also,
but there's no process where you guys sat down and figured this out. Cause I feel like when I interviewed the founder of Warby Parker, there's a reason why he sold the monocle. He saw that there's like these old mustaches were coming back with his audience. People were starting to wear jeans that looked like they were from the 20s. He wanted to have something that felt like that experience. And so he created the monocle. He didn't need to sell any. Frankly, he'd been better off if not a single person bought a monocle. He just wanted to show this is what our brand's about. And this monocle is not going to make money. It's going to carry our brand to everyone who looks at it. I feel like you guys know that. Was there any session where you did drugs and tried to figure out what your brand was about, or maybe didn't do drugs but did like a craft cocktail and try to figure it out?
I mean, we literally, like I said, we talk about getting sick. And at what point, what was the coolest thing you did in the last year? Did you have a drink near you? You know what I mean? What do you do when you're out with your kids? So stuff like that. So we're just trying to put our product where people are having their fun. And so I don't know. We definitely are not in a phase of Warby Parker where we can afford to come out with products that don't make money yet. But if we did, it'd maybe make for a cool story. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, at this point, the cocktail shaker is similar in the sense that we used it. We literally making a cocktail in an old shaker. You shake your hands, it gets ice cold. The whole thing sweats. And we said, well, we've got a cup that doesn't sweat. What if we made a shaker that was double wall vacuum insulated, which we have a design patent pending because there actually isn't a patent on that. And you could literally shake a cocktail for 20 minutes and your hands would never get cold. Well, that's pretty sick. So let's make these shakers, you know? And so, and people are digging it. Now we're trying to even feel like there may even be a commercial play. Like we've had a lot of bars buying them recently that they may like make a, like say you have a table, they'll make a whole 30 ounce thing of shots and set it there and it'll stay there for 3 hours, ice cold. And then you can pour your drinks as you wanted.
So there's some
other commercial applications that definitely were not there when we were, or weren't doing drugs, talking about where our business is going.
And then your logo's on the shaker that they get at their speakeasy, and it feels like something that they could take home. The other image that I love of you guys, so there's the speakeasy one that I love, and the other one is there's a woman who's pouring wine into her water bottle, which I see all the freaking time, of course.
I know.
Right? Yeah. We're not the generation of – we're not the people who are going to carry flasks, though flasks are pretty freaking cool. You might want to do that, want to bring it back. But wine in a water bottle, I've seen that happen.
I know. Yeah, definitely.
Especially on the beach, because they don't allow that. They don't allow wine.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, on the beach, on the boat, you know, I mean, a lot of places where you don't want glass anymore. I mean, yeah, it's just a little easier also to take off your cap instead of pull that cork out all the time. And I mean, yeah. I'm not a wine drinker per se, but it's amazing how many people that do.
All right. What's the best part of having achieved this? Like leaving your job and finally building this up. What's the best part of this whole thing?
I mean, I think the pinch me moments and the coolest part are, you know, like I'm heading out to go. You're probably not a golfer, but I'm going to the US Open this afternoon, right? Going to Wisconsin to watch some golf with a buddy of mine. Like, I didn't have to ask anybody if I could do that, right? I did check to make sure I can have my phone on the course just so, you know, I mean, I'm not,
and
but
you
I
can?
Mean, like, and you can, you know, or it's like, honestly, I've had this aspiration of, you know, can I kind of snowbird at this young age with young kids? Like, can I get out of, I live in South Florida. Can I get out of here in the summer and go to a lake in Minnesota or something like that for a couple months? And honestly, in the next year or two, I think I will be able to do that. And so
because you're not in the warehouse anyway, you're miles away from it.
Yep. I don't have a geographic boundary. I don't have meetings that I need to go to on a consistent basis. You know what I mean? And so that's the most liberating part about it. I mean, on the other side, it's when do you not work? Because if work's right there accessible, then it's hard to not work. And then, you know, the ideas of when I had a buddy in Baltimore, maybe last weekend, and a friend in Alabama text me that they saw my cups at a store, you know, and it's like, that's pretty cool. Like when you're out and about and your product is somewhere that you don't know they're at, and they happen to stumble in it and they talk to the people working there and the people are like, oh, these cups are great, you know, and describing our products. Like, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting to actually create a physical product where you know that you're experiencing it. People come over to your house, they get to experience it. People randomly find it and you see it in their hands. All right.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere tonight, people are going to be at a barbecue or hanging out and drinking out of a sick cup and getting sick. Like, that's fun. I don't know where they're at, but I hope that I'm with them.
And do you agree with me that this is a new thing? I don't know that I would call it a trend, but it's this quiet movement that's happening of people like you who are starting out by just grabbing stuff off of China as is with the logo, and then they're starting to make their own and grow the business.
Yeah, I think it's easier than ever. And I think, you know, they're definitely the physical products, I think at first were daunting, and now I think it's more accessible.
Yeah. And it's more challenging, frankly, in many ways, but like inventory, bad production, but there's huge upside to it. And I'm excited to see how far you've come in such a short period of time. And if anyone wants to go check this out, first of all, just go to Amazon and type in sick. And one of the cool things you'll see is he's got competitors now. People are buying up his keyword. So you're like typing sick and some guy's like really crappy version of sick will come up for you. And now that you've taught me that the top is supposed to be colored, I can see there's one, for example, a Simply Modern mug here. They didn't go all the way to the top or the bottom because I could see why it would be tough. Something's got to grab hold of the cup while it's being painted in the factory.
That's right.
All right. So go check them out on Amazon. Go check them out on their website. The website is just Sick Cups. Sick is spelled S-I-C, sickcups.com. And I'm grateful to you for doing this interview. Congratulations. And to everyone else, thank you for listening. And of course, don't forget the two sponsors are the company that will tell you go away if you're not a good fit, which I actually am very proud of. It's called Top Tal. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. TOPTAL.com. And the second company is the one that I use anytime I want to talk to my customers or partners or anyone. If you want to really get something scheduled right, you need Acuity Scheduling. It'll help you sell more by understanding and talking to your customers. Go to AcuityScheduling.com/MixerG. AcuityScheduling.com/MixerG. Thanks, guys, and thanks for subscribing. Bye, everyone.